the old world is ending, and we have the opportunity to rethink everything. This is a show about the structural problems in our world and the real solutions that we have today to transition from an apocalyptic storm of war, scarcity, and ecological collapse into a collaborative and sustainable futuristic society that serves all life. You may think it's an impossible dream, but the alternative is an inevitable nightmare. We're your hosts, Zachary Marlowe, Matt Holton, and Amanda Smith. And together, when we can move past this economic absurdity to come together and actualize our collective potential to create something completely new, we are Moneyless Society.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Moneyless Society podcast, where we discuss anything and everything related to a moneyless society, pushing past the limits of our economic system with science, technology, collaboration, sustainability, philosophy, and everything and anything related to the pursuit of a moneyless society. My name is Matt Holton. I'm one of your three hosts, along with the lovely Amanda Smith and Zachary Marlowe. And I'll go ahead and hand it over to Zach. Zach's going to bring us in with a few thoughts. Go for it.
Well, so basically, this is our first episode. This is one of the first times, honestly, that the three of us have talked. I mean, we've been getting to know each other over the past several months and posting in this group, Moneyless Society, that Matt started. But I see this really more than just a few friends getting together to talk about something they care about. This is the beginning of a movement for me. This is a shift from thinking about and toiling in, under these aims and goals as one person separated from the mass of humanity, to coming together, a new kind of togetherness, a new kind of brain trust with the shared aim that this system is not working. No matter what you think, no matter what your beliefs are, money touches every single thing in our life. It is the dictator that controls everything in our world. It is the god of our world. And whether you think that's a good thing or a bad thing, clearly things could be better. Things are not working out the way that they should be or could be. So this, for me, represents doing something about it. You know, going from that place of complaining or of just laboring under the inefficiency and stupidity and the frustration and alienation of feeling like, am I going crazy? Is this for real? Am I the only one that thinks this? No. If you're listening to this, you're not the only one that thinks this. This system doesn't work. Plain and simple. It's badly designed and not designed at all. So we're coming together here to bring our minds together, to create, to envision a new and better world, and to draw on the immeasurable creativity and innovation and just the countless individuals out there that are working night and day to make this world better. And we want to give them a voice. We want to talk to them. We want to engage in frank discussion. And we just want to push the ball forward and to shift from a totally reactive mentality where we're just mindlessly reacting to every tragedy and catastrophe that comes our way, to really stepping back, coming together, putting our heads together, and envisioning a better world, designing a better world, planning a better world, by basically shifting out of scarcity of what we're limited to and moving into abundance of what we could do. So I kind of wanted to open this up with a skeptic's perspective that I feel like a lot of people listening to this would be like, a moneyless society? Well, how are we going to pay for stuff? You know, how am I going to get what I'm going to do? People are just going to lay around and be lazy all day? So I want to open it up for all of us to just basically justify the premise, you know? Why is this something that's worth listening to? Why is this something that's worth fighting and living and dying for? Why is this important to you? Why a moneyless society? Amanda?
Okay, so when it comes to a moneyless society premise, the thing that appeals to me the most about it, of course, is the abundance aspect. Because when you look at what we're dealing with now, you see countless lives lost every single day. Every minute that goes by, someone is suffering or someone is dying due to nothing more than austerity, the life-sucking demands of the oligarchy, the inefficiencies of this system design, and it's all only because of a few people who obtain the power to make the decisions, and they have that power because of one thing: money. I often refer to money as the middleman, because no one likes a middleman, but yet we're letting one run our lives. It dictates everything, as you mentioned, right down to the quality of our lives, our health, our relationships, our own inner perspective, everything. So when I envision pursuing this moneyless society thing, and people are like, why would you do that? Why would you even try? That's not even natural. I get really excited because I have the opportunity to open people's minds up to alternatives that they are completely oblivious to continue educating myself, but also simultaneously educating people on the philosophy behind how we've arrived at where we're at now and how we can stop that trajectory in its tracks and take civilization in a completely different direction that's going to be egalitarian. It's going to benefit everyone versus just a small portion of people who are keeping us literally from living our lives all for a bottom dollar.
One of the main reasons for me that this has been super important is the whole sustainability aspect of it. I mean, to me, it just doesn't seem like capitalism is going to allow us to operate within the limits of our biosphere effectively in the long term and sustain the human race. Because as it is now, you know, it's just infinite growth on a finite planet. I'm sure, you know, most of the people here have heard that term. And, you know, as much as we all know how unsustainable that is, at the same time, there's, you know, society really collectively isn't doing anything about it, you know, on a large scale. But on the other hand, society also doesn't really seem to be aware of a lot of the other options, a lot of the new directions that, you know, social arrangements and structures and systems and things like that are heading in the directions that they can head. And that's kind of one of the main reasons why. You know, this show, I think, was most important to me is we want to bring some of these new systems, some of these new structures out to the forefront for people to hear about, for people to learn about, and to explore, you know, because a lot of the people listening to the show, they may have heard about, you know, the Venus Project or the Zeitgeist Movement. They may know who Peter Joseph is. A lot of people listening to it may not also, you know, but they might not know about a lot of the less well-known movements and organizations out there that are pursuing, you know, similar causes and issues, say like One Community Global or Open Source Economy or, you know, the Ubuntu Movement. You know, several others that I can name off the top of my head that are kind of all swirling around this same vision and same goal of creating, you know, it could be termed a lot of different things, you know, post-scarcity economy, open access economy, sharing economy, you know, lots of others, resource-based economy, natural obviously, you know, but one of the main goals is just to kind of show people and have some solid open-ended discussions about a lot of these topics. One, to learn about them ourselves, because we obviously don't know everything, and you know, getting experts on here gives us the opportunity to you know, learn and pick people's brains and, you know, everything, things of that nature, and really kind of get to the bottom of a lot of these issues. And I feel there's a huge need for that these days, too, with this whole sustainability aspect and climate change and so on and so forth. You know, now is really the time where a lot of people are, especially with coronavirus and all this, they're itching for a new economic system at this point. We've seen a huge flaw and lots of faults in our economic system. But where are the solutions at this point? You know, is Biden cutting it? You know, he couldn't even get a, you know, $15 minimum, you know,
can't
minimum
even cut
wage
that
passed.
Check, Biden.
Right. And so, I mean, is this really the solution? Is this just like agonizingly slow change that we see through government and politics and everything? Is this really going to be what we need? Or are we going to have to do something more on our own? Are we going to have to create solutions on a grassroots level and really get people to start, you know, living and acting differently, you know, on an individual and a community basis? And I think that's probably where a lot of the change is going to take place fundamentally, you know, and that's what we want to help people build, I think, too, is local change in their lives, helping themselves become resilient, developing systems with themselves, their neighbors, you know, as well as kind of pursuing this in the long term to try to develop, you know, the larger scale open relationships within this community too, and really trying to cement, you know, these concepts into place where they can actually be some sort of a foundation, you know, for people to go off of, you know, provide a good resource for people to you know, come to and figure a lot of this out. So I don't want to keep going and going and going. I know I've said a lot, so I'll go ahead and hand it over to, I guess, Zach again. What do you think about all that, Zach?
I have spent my entire life in a state of alienation from this system, that it's just so deeply personal, you know, it's just so deeply interwoven with what it means to be human. And I feel like the thing about this system and this way of life that has always just bothered me, and I grew up with a relative amount of wealth. I grew up in abundance. I didn't have to think about money. I didn't have to question it. And I think that's kind of the way it should be for everyone. I mean, we just shouldn't have to think about it. It gets in the way of everything. It reduces things. It's materialism. It reduces things to their component parts and to their base and crude utility in a way that is just nonsensical. It's not utilitarian at all. There is no function in it. There is no necessity to any of this. And ultimately, it's unimaginative. It's an incredibly small-minded, petty, and unimaginative way of life. When we could do so much, we could do so much more. We could literally do anything. We could restructure and reshape our world into like Charlie Chaplin said in his marvelous Great Dictator speech, into a wonderful adventure. And that's what life should be. That's how I live my life. That's all my life I have been obsessed with escape, with escaping the confines of the white picket fence and the American dream that I grew up in, that I saw destroy my parents' relationships, that I saw pollute, you know, a happy family, you know, with greed and with unhappiness and discontentment. I just, you know, as a child, saw the achievement of all the American goals of having a boat and having three cars or two cars, whatever, you know, just having all this shit that we're told is going to make us happy, and not feeling happy, feeling distinctly unhappy, feeling alienated, feeling hurt, feeling lonely. That this system, it's not just a method of exchange. It's not just dictating commerce. It dictates every single aspect of our lives, and it's penetrated so completely into the ways that we see ourselves and the way that we relate to the people around us, that our relationships have become transactional, that people don't do things because they care about it, because they feel it's right or important. They do it because they are just lusting after money and material things that don't mean anything, or they just have to survive. And I think that's a tragedy. That's a tragedy that we are losing the value, the true value in this world, because everything necessary, everything vital to life has been reduced by giving it a price tag, by saying this is what water is worth. Or I'm an artist, you know, I have been paid for about 3% of the jobs I've ever done, and I've lived my life for the past several years going to great and even insane lengths to just be able to express myself, to be able to do what I'm good at doing, because I have to fight this fucking system to express myself, to do what comes naturally to me. And I know that there are so many people out there in this world that are really brilliant and creative and have ideas, have a vision, but they are not able to express that because this system has a wall. There's a wall of currency between them. I could go on forever about this, about the innate stupidity and thoughtlessness of all this. I just went to Walmart because I'm in the middle of nowhere in Indiana and I needed to buy a heater. You know, I needed to buy things. And I was just really struck by the insanity of this narrative of convenience, that this way of life is all about convenience. Like, convenience and like a cheap, low bottom line is the foundation of this system, but it's not convenient. If you think about the articles of convenience, like a plastic cup, a single-use plastic cup, you buy it because it's convenient, you don't have to wash it, whatever. Is it really convenient, though, when the oil that cup is made of, I mean, every plastic thing in your world that you just treat so flippantly, it's made out of oil that had to be extracted out of the ground. Not only extracted out of the ground, our military and our government had to topple some democratically elected government to, you know, maintain control of those resources, to suck them out of the ground in a violent, destructive process that we've sucked the earth so dry that we're down to the point where we're blasting drinkable water into the earth, into the bosom of our Mother Earth, to suck the last drops of this oil out so we can extract it in this pollutive, hideous process, contort it, torture it into the shape of this plastic cup, this thing that you're going to think about once, and then ship it all the way across the world so that it can be put into a facility and then shipped in a truck. It's just like this insane, ridiculous, inconvenient way of life. It just makes no sense. So you can, you know, play a beer pong with that cup, you know, drink it dry, crunch it up, and then throw it into a landfill. It's just stupid. It's just visionless. There's no poetry to it. There's no beauty. This is just not a world that I want to live in. And this is a world that I want to live in. Our world is a beautiful, marvelous, wonderful miracle. It's a miracle that we live here, that we can connect like this. And so many people, you know, they say this economic system gave us the things that we have here, gave us this microphone, gave us these clothes, gave us this technology that lets us talk to each other. But no, the system didn't do that. These things came about in spite of and not because of the system. Human beings and human creativity and inspiration, genuine inspiration, gave us that. So it's just a visionless society. So this, for me, it's a chance to build a new world. It's a chance to really think about things and to make a world that we actually want to live in, to actually put thought into it, to actually flip everything upside down. Because money, I'm kind of going a little long here, but I'll say one more thing here. Because all the worst things in our world are done because they make money. Fossil fuels, price gouging of pharmaceutical drugs, like all of this horrible stuff, it's just done because it's profitable. And to get back to our boy Peter Joseph, who I'm amazed that more people don't know about him. I'm reading his wonderful book right now, and it's just taking this structuralist approach to everything that I've just felt in my bones for so long, that people blame the individual because we live in this construct of individualism, because that is the internalization of materialism. We blame the individual when really it's a system, that this system of incentives drives us to do this, to destroy our own habitat, to destroy our own home. For what?
If I may interject, first of all, that's the smoothest trip down a rabbit hole I've ever been taken on, so thanks for that. Secondly, there's no way in hell I can follow that. But I can tell you that I resonate with every single syllable of what you just said, and I'm so glad that you put forth the effort to bring to light many different aspects.
It's obvious.
No, apparently. It's obviously effortlessly for you. But no, seriously, you definitely got your mind in the right spot to be on this train. Me personally, the way that I arrived at this point, my background is rooted in depravity, both with personal experiences and observing depravity all around me. I come from a part of the United States that happens to be one of the most impoverished. So from an early age, not trying to virtue signal or anything, but like seriously, I can remember from a very early age always being dumbfounded about the things that were going on around me. I used to think maybe it's true. I'm just very simple-minded. But what I'm learning is I think I just have like a very rational way of thinking and seeing things. And so the stuff that I couldn't grasp when I was younger and to this day, I am finding is just the result of living in a system that isn't rational. It isn't efficient. It isn't personal. Everything, as you said, is done for profit. We live in a for-profit world. We allow a piece of paper with decorations on it to stand in between life and what sustains life. Like, we can't access housing and medicine and food and water because we say you can't, because you don't have enough pieces of paper to pay for it. I just can't wrap my head around that. The fact that people are suffering and dying, as I was saying earlier. Also, we can line the pockets of someone who already has more than they'll ever need in their entire life.
It's personal to every one of us, you know? I think everybody has these stories, and really empowering to hear it. So yeah, Matt.
Absolutely.
I know you got a story.
What kind of set me off in that direction, I think, probably was, I was actually raised in an upper middle class household too. And, we never really hurt for money when I was a kid, but money still caused a lot of problems, you know. There was an issue of my mother's death. She ended up committing suicide after a bout with, she got in a car accident, and then she lost a lawsuit. And so she had her neck fused together, like a couple of discs in her neck were fused together. They were hoping to get a large settlement from it, basically, you know, and she never ended up getting a settlement. It was a very, very small settlement compared to what, they had sued for. And it barely even took care of the medical bills. It was, I think it ended up to be like, you know, maybe 10 or 20,000, maybe $30,000. But that was like the medical bills at that point were more, than that. And she kind of dove into a deep depression at that point. She got addicted to painkillers, prescription drugs, and then at that point she just kind of went downhill, and she ended up jumping off a bridge in Houston when I was 15. From that point, I ran away from home. Didn't finish high school. I dropped out of high school. My dad ended up remarrying about a year later, so I ended up moving back in with him and her. But I ended up leaving the house when I was 18. Got in a big fight with them over more money issues, kind of halfway too. And then another reason was my father's a hoarder too, and there was a financial incentive for him to always be a hoarder. He would go to garage sales and he would buy a bunch of stuff every single weekend and be like, oh, I paid 25 cents for this, Matt. Look, I paid, 50 cents for this. This will sell in a store for at least $20-$30, and it was always all these antiques and collectible items. But the only problem was is he never sold any of them. And he would go out every weekend and he would buy a truckload full of shit and he would bring it home in the house and it would sit there in the house week after week after week after week. And when I was a kid, I thought it was cool, because I had more toys than any kid on the block. I probably had more toys than all the kids on the block put together because he bought them all at garage sales for pennies on the dollar. But what wasn't cool was eventually after a while, there was just a trail going through the house, the boxes stacked up to the ceiling fan. We had two couches in one room. You couldn't find either one of them. And, we had a flea infestation and a cockroach infestation. I would be sitting at home, trying to do my homework, and I would hear the cockroaches in the cabinet scurrying around, and every now and then one would crawl out of the cabinet. This is like, 5 feet away from me in the kitchen. I'd be like, yeah, okay, that's the cabinet that we haven't been in like 4 years because there's a, cockroach infestation and these like ancient grains that he's been storing under there for about the past 10 years. So yeah, that was, but the hoarding kind of affected me a lot and it kind of made me an anti-capitalist almost in a sense, I think, because there was a financial incentive to this hoarding, that I experienced all throughout my childhood. And it kind of made me an anti-hoarder in some ways. Now I kind of almost perpetually get rid of things, that I don't use. And that sit around. I'm also kind of a neat freak, things bother me now when they get too messy and things like that. So I'm constantly cleaning. I'm constantly getting rid of things. Those are a couple of the ways that it affected me a lot. And after that, I was just kind of searching for alternatives for a long time after I moved out as an adult and everything. I knew that I didn't like the systems and the way that it worked, especially the medical system. I just loathed the medical system for the way it treated my mother with the prescription drugs and everything and the surgeries when there were probably better methods. It was just whiplash. That was it. She suffered from whiplash and it ended up having multiple discs together and ended in psychosis and drug addiction and suicide. And to me, it was completely unnecessary, and it tore me apart, fucking tore me apart. And I still deal with shit from that today. And to me, it's like I don't want other people to have to go through that. And granted, I wasn't poor. I can only imagine. If we hadn't had a decent income and those things that happened too. I very well may not be here because the fact that we had a little bit of money is probably one of the reasons why I ended up making it through those situations and halfway still sane. But still, it kind of put an extreme distaste in my mouth for a lot of the things, and money was always a very central topic in our household too. When I was growing up, everything was very, very money centered. My father always cared about money first and foremost. If you spilled something or broke something, oh my God, you just broke something that was worth $20. You're going to pay me that. You're going to mow the lawn for that and da, da, da. And, same thing with, like my career and everything. Didn't matter what I wanted to pursue as far as happiness or what I was good at or anything like that. It was just simply what would make the most money. And, my dad wanted me to be a rock star. So he put me through music lessons at a young age. And, because he wanted me to make, multi-million dollars as a rock star. That was his dream. And then real estate, I was kind of into the music thing, real estate I never was very much. But he just kind of drove them so far down my throat and, without really giving any kind of, attention to anything that I want to do with my life. I was really kind of into science and math, and I probably could have been, a physicist or something like that had I really put my mind to it. But that wasn't anything that he was concerned about, trying to cultivate in me or anything like that. And looking back on that, I think it's a shame, you know, because I would love to be able to contribute things like that now. I would love to be like an engineer or a physicist or something like that and be able to sit down and invent things or create, ideas like that. And it's not to say that I still couldn't do that someday, but, you know, it would require a lot more work and effort and knowledge and skills than I have now. So it's kind of like a little bit of my backstory there, just to show you, you know, where I'm kind of coming from and the things that I've experienced that have kind of turned me in this direction. And, you know, it's not to say that capitalism never works in any and all circumstances ever, you know, because it's treated us well, you know, from in certain circumstances, and it's gotten us a lot of, a lot of what we have in life. It's gotten us where we are. But one of the main points I'd like to make about it is, to me, it's created a world that's ripe for the next stage of evolution, essentially. You know, we've come to a precipice now where capitalism can no longer solve the problems that it's created. It's created certain problems, and it doesn't have the proper tools in its tool belt in order to move past and fix those problems. Now we have to come up with new systems, new structures that will fix the problems that the capitalist problems have created. And that's not a bad thing, necessarily. You know, we just need to recognize it as what it is, and then essentially say, okay, well, we have other tools. You know, money has been a good tool. It's been a very useful tool for thousands upon thousands of years, and so has trade, so has transactions. But, you know, one of the main problems now is everything has become transactionalized. Everything that we see, almost every relationship now, everything that you do, every good or service that you buy or purchase, I mean, everything has a price tag to it now. It's like you were saying, and it takes a lot of the personal personal aspect out of it. It takes a lot of the humanness out of it. And another one of the main points was just the fact that instead of us trusting each other, now it's like this immediate reciprocity that we demand. You know, because we don't trust each other anymore. We've lost that humanness. We've lost that sense of trust. And so we need reciprocation right here and now in the form of money, right? Instead of saying, you know what, I trust you. We're humans. We're here. We collaborate. We work together. I trust that the system will reciprocate when I need it. You know, large scale systemic reciprocity as opposed to individual immediate demanding reciprocity. You know what I mean? That's the difference between collaboration, working together on a large scale, and this just haywire, you know, economic system with the invisible hand, quote unquote. So I'll shut up now. I think I've said enough. What do you think?
To sort of parallel it to your own really tragic life story, it's like all of that stuff and all of those false starts and all of those things you didn't become, you became what you are now, you know, in spite of that, and in a way because of that. And it's like, it's very tragic to hear that. And everybody has, so many people in this world have just been ravaged by this world and this way of life. And there's so many people I know that are just completely filled with hatred and boiling anger. And they're not even able to think straight. They're not able to look it in the eyes. They in a way just become a mirror for it. They become a reflection, a pure and unthinking reactive reflection of what created them. When in reality, you know, the keystone of evolution is mutation, is fuck ups, is things going wrong and learning from them. And the problem with this system right now is that we're not learning from these mistakes. We're not cataloging these mistakes on a mass level. People like us, I think people who have experienced some degree of tragedy, who have personally watched this system hurt them, who have personally felt alienated by it. I mean, to go a little bit into my personal life, I mean, I had a glowing halcyon childhood that was, I never had to think about money in any way. And I just got to live in fairy tales. I just got to live in science fiction and fantasy and imagination. And I was always drawing, and teachers like forced that out of me. I was like, I clearly had an aptitude for art and creativity. And I literally had teachers that were like, stop doing that. Stop doing that. Even though it had had no impact on my studies. I would be drawing and they'd say, stop drawing. And I could just, without looking up, just repeat everything that they had just said. Like, I'm listening. It's just not holding my attention. So it was just school. It was just this like prison to me. It was this loveless, unimaginative place. And I just constantly sought an escape. I just constantly sought better worlds. I was constantly like creating these fantasy worlds in my head, these places to escape to. My fixation as a kid was to like make up an imaginary world and like desperately, obsessively like find a friend to like reenact it with me so I could just get the fuck out of this miserable suburb, you know, to get away from this unloving, unthinking, ugly world. And that escapism, you know, years later in life, as I started to feel the more of the pressures of the world and to really, I was always very sensitive. I was hypersensitive because I wasn't, you know, toxically beaten. I wasn't conditioned to hate myself. I was, you know, loved growing up. And I was very, very sensitive. I've always been very sensitive to the emotions of other people. And I feel like in looking at like the tragedy of my life, it's not so much the things that have been done to me. It's although I feel other people's feelings and to have empathy for other people in this world, to move through this world and not be closed off to it, to not scab yourself over to the pain and darkness that's going on around us, to not ignore it and say, you know, it is what it is. Oh, okay. That's life. It's like that will make you go insane. And I feel like more than anything that made, I went insane because of that. Because, well, I mean, to backtrack a little more, I mean, go back to school, I was just exuberant and I was wild and I wouldn't shut up and I wouldn't stop asking questions. And teachers in a prison industrial school complex with 40 kids to muscle through a nonsensical rubric, we're just like this, he's got to shut up. He's got to stop. I got to get through my lesson plan. So they medicated me. They put me on Adderall and Ritalin and they put me on meth, you know, at 10 years old, they put me on meth. And I don't blame my parents or anything because they were just trying to help. You know, they were doing what they thought was right. And it was just totally wrong. And just they couldn't fathom the consequences of this. So, I mean, it just basically set me on this roller coaster, this train of all these mental illnesses of like, okay, I'm an exuberant, wild child. You put me on meth. Now I feel like a fucking robot. So I'm going to get anxious and depressed. And now they're going to treat me with other drugs for the anxiety and for the depression. And it's just like more materialistic spot fixes that an object or a technology or, you know, something can fix, that I wasn't treated as I was, as someone who was different, who had a different mentality, who was neurodivergent, who was not neurotypical, that is like, oh, okay, you have a different way of thinking. You have a different way of operating, you know, let's encourage that. Let's find you a place where you work. That was never attempted. I had good teachers, I think, that, you know, were patient with me at least, but the system itself was never like, okay, you clearly aren't good at this thing, but you're good at this thing, so do it. So it was just very brutal. And when I got out of all that, I self-medicated and I continued to try to escape. And I finally did have like friends and social relationships, which didn't happen until I was like 18 or 19 years old. I really fiendishly, you know, tried to dull that pain and sensitivity with alcohol, with drugs, with whatever the fuck would make it work, you know? And it just made me into a monster. It made me into an angry, raging, crazy person. And it just destroyed so many relationships because I just couldn't function. I couldn't be at home in my own self. I was not okay with me because I was told my whole life, like, you're sick. You're not supposed to be like that. That's wrong. And because all the things that I was just weren't profitable or effective or whatever. But there was a certain point in just a total breakdown where I started to get really obsessed with colony collapse disorder and bees. And when I was a little kid, I'd had this incident where I was playing in the backyard and I basically put myself in a situation where I got stung by about 80 bees. I don't know how many it was, but so I was irrationally afraid of them for all my life. And I just, at this point where I was supposed to be like entering into adulthood, but I wasn't really, I was still in this stagnant kind of arrested development where I hadn't really, you know, okay, go to school, get a job. That's not really like adulthood. That's not a rite of passage. So I just really, my subconscious was just obsessed with the bees. And I started watching all these colony collapse disorder documentaries and just realizing, I connected it with this Albert Einstein quote where he said, if the bees go extinct, we have 5 years until all life on Earth follows. And I just, ecology made sense to me. And my dad had always raised me to be an environmentalist. And I remember watching An Inconvenient Truth and we'd go to all these environmentalist events and things like that. So I kind of understood it, but I physically felt it. Holy shit, this is all coming to an end. This way of life is destroying the earth. It's killing our home. It's killing everything. And that just made me even more insane. And I was trying to tell people, I was trying to warn people, like, this is happening. What are we doing dancing around and making ironic jokes and drinking and partying? The fucking world is ending. Are you insane? Am I insane? What's going on here? And I just completely disintegrated. I spiraled. I set the controls for the heart of the sun and just destroyed all my relationships and ended up driving away to some other town to pursue something, and was really in a manic episode, and destroyed my car, ended up back at my mom's house, and I was just really just courting suicide. I just didn't want to live anymore. I just kept thinking. But it wasn't like, it was totally internalized. It was like, I'm going to be this person forever. And that's unthinkable. I'm going to keep fucking up forever. So I should just die. And I expressed that to my mother, and sure, being a medical professional, she put me into a hospital, and it was just one flew of the cuckoo's nest, like, you know, exactly. And I just kind of worked my way out of that. They were like, we're not going to let you out of here. It, you know, all this stuff you're saying about the world being fucked up, it's bullshit. You know, you just need to get on drugs and get back to work. It's just really what they said.
You know, it's just another poor profit system. The healthcare system is just one big industry. And not to condemn every single psychologist out there. Obviously, there are some who understand and try to help people work on the actual root of their problem. In fact, in social media, I've seen a lot of lately supposedly psychologists speaking out on their personal social media platforms saying things like, people just need money. That's the problem. People are depressed, suicidal, physically sick, and defeated because they don't have the artificial resource that accesses the resources they need to live. So, you know, I was just trying to grab onto one thing there, Marlo, because the both of you have traversed such a vast landscape of experiences, and I hope that everyone listening is finding points to resonate with. I know I have. If I could add to that at all, I would just be echoing Matt with his disgust regarding the healthcare system. I lost my mother because of the fact she had no insurance. And the cruel irony in that is that she was an RN. She served the medical industry for 20 some years, particularly the mental health industry. And then she came down with something very akin to Lou Gehrig. She had multiple system atrophy. She went from being able to move around like you or I to being absolutely frozen stiff in about 14 months. And about another year later, she was gone. That's the part of my story I get eager about sharing, obviously, because you can't just harp about stuff and don't offer any hope or solution, right? So after everything I've been through, and particularly in the past 5 years, I lost both my parents within a year. Our house burned down to the ground, lost everything, including all heirlooms and all traces of our heritage. I lost my job, or would-be career, as I mentioned. And I kind of ended up with almost nothing, this almost absolutely nothing, like kind of like Job from the Bible, you know? You know, God, per se, took everything from him, and then He then learned how to be grateful and whatever. I did not. I was extremely bitter. I was full of hate and rage and fury that I have to douse to this day. But what I did learn is that even after every horrible thing me and my family went through, it didn't matter to the system, to the capitalist machine, to the people that are running organizations that are supposed to be social services for those in need, for the quote-unquote leaders, the politicians, the corporations. It didn't matter what I or anyone went through. If I was not producing or being part of the bottom line, I didn't exist. So what that led to for me was an opportunity actually to reinvent myself, to realize that my whole life, I have just been trying to live up to a capitalist standard, to a monetized standard. And that even after losing everything, I was no more, no less to the system than I was when I quote unquote had everything. We don't have that much left, that much time left to realize that none of us matter to the system, but we do matter. And so we should be living for ourselves, for those we love, for the things that we are passionate about. And that inherently will create the world that we can all thrive in. And so that's how I found permission, per se, because that's what was holding me back the whole time, was I felt like I needed permission to be myself. And then when I lost everything and all the things that gave me status and helped me live up to the standards of the monetized system, I realized that I never needed permission to begin with. It was all just a huge falsehood. It was a big nightmare. And it has far from ended, but it's not as bad as it used to be, because now it's like being in a lucid dream. I'm making the decisions. I'm at the helm, and I'm enjoying the directions that I'm taking versus being herded in directions that I don't want to take any longer.
I'm enjoying the directions you're taking too. Matt, what about you?
Yeah, so it's kind of funny. The last year really kind of provided me more with an opportunity that I hadn't had before because of the whole coronavirus thing. I mean, before that, I was teaching piano lessons full time. I was also, working real estate. I was a real estate agent, and that was kind of a full time gig. I was trying to do both of them essentially, and it wasn't working very well. And I was also, at the same time, I had the Moneyless Society, the website going and all that. But I wasn't really able to devote any time to it. And I was kind of just really at that point trying to make money to make a living, for my family. I got a baby, got a 3-year-old son, got a fiance. I was kind of like one of my last hurrahs, really, just to make a living and make a career. I was teaching piano lessons, driving to students' houses, teaching piano. I had about 20, 25 students or so at one point over the last few years. And then working real estate also, making phone calls, trying to, get listings for, both commercial and residential properties. Struggling to pay the bills, teaching piano. And honestly, the coronavirus, I know it's been a really horrible situation for a lot of people, but for me, it's been kind of a blessing almost in a sense, because I was able to get unemployment, which I know a lot of people weren't able to get that. So I'm very fortunate to have gotten that. But that enabled me to, keep up with the bills while I was able to devote some time, to all this stuff, to the Moneyless Society website, to creating this group on Facebook that's been, pretty active as of lately, for the podcast. Marlo and I were talking about making a movie here. I've been working on my book as well. So it's given me a lot of time in the last year to kind of really start focusing a lot of time and effort, towards the Moneyless Society projects, which honestly feels better than anything I've ever done in my life. So for me, it's been a real blessing, honestly, being able to do this and kind of get the word out there. And I feel like the coronavirus as well kind of set the stage for a lot of this stuff, because all of a sudden, after being kind of dormant for a while, that whole community regarding the resource-based economy and Zeitgeist movement, Venus Project, and all these other things, they just started popping again right when coronavirus came on the scene. Within the first few weeks, everybody was like, okay, the economic system's going to shit, obviously we're going to need something else now. Hey, what about that resource-based economy, remember that? Oh yeah, whatever happened to that thing?
Matt, if I can briefly interject here, I actually was blessed to get on unemployment myself, and it was a really life-changing thing. Just I've never had money like that. I've never had $7,000 in my bank account. And I luckily lived in an RV and I had almost no expenses. So I was able to channel all of that money into just living my life easily without ever thinking about money, and completely investing in, really beefing up my production setup and getting an amazing video camera, movie camera, getting to the point where I'm not relying on anybody else to make movies. I have all the stuff that I need, all the gear, all the tools and art supplies I need to really tell stories on the level that I've always wanted to.
Yeah, no, I was going to say too, I got a fat payment too, like right when the unemployment hit, because I didn't even know that I was able to get it at first. And then somebody told me, they're like, hey, you might be able to get unemployment. They have those benefits. I'm like, what, really? And yeah, but I did, I got, it was, I think it was over $10,000, because I waited over a few months. I mean, yeah. And so it was life-changing, honestly, getting that amount of money in a single payment. It was a life-changing thing. And all of a sudden I had, after not paying rent for 3 months too, because we were behind on rent, we didn't even know how we were going to pay rent. I'm still paying off back rent in the place that we have now, but we hadn't paid rent in 3 months, and our complex was like, okay, are you guys going to start paying rent or now? But then we got that, and all of a sudden problem solved.
This is just a really great opportunity to interject the grammar side of the unemployment pursuit in particular. But first of all, I want to give life to what you and Marlo are saying. Like, those are beautiful stories. I feel the relief in the words that you're speaking when you talk about the things you were able to acquire, the things that improved your quality of life, you know, how that blockade between the resources was removed simply because you were given what you were needed. But we won't get into that because I could totally go down a rabbit hole about how also our labor is exploited just so we can access resources. But to shed light on what a large percentage of people experienced regarding the unemployment, it's a wonderful example for the archaic infrastructure that we're still dealing with a monetized environment. I never got a penny of unemployment, and many people didn't. Many people that applied thinking that resource was just going to be there and it was going to save them from this halt of desperation, never happened for them. And that's just one of numerous, if not countless, inefficiencies, right. As I said,
completely
this archaic
not
infrastructure.
Fair, right? And what makes me more deserving of unemployment than you, or say anybody that's undocumented, you know, right. Or you know, and a lot, or maybe a 1099. You know, or somebody who hasn't had their job long enough to qualify for unemployment, you know,
right. What makes the
system is
more worthy than another. What makes one person more deserving of health care? What makes one person
exactly.
more deserving of existence altogether? And it's like this narrative that's like, well, you didn't work hard enough, that if you work harder, then you may get more money. And it's just like, for me personally, I've never been motivated by money. The best things I've ever done, I didn't do for money. I kind of feel like it makes things worse. It makes things worse when somebody's only doing it for their paycheck, you know, into my own little light at the end of the tunnel is that it all comes back down to money and having none. And that was the best thing that ever happened to me, was having no money at all. So after leaving the mental institution, these army guys had contacted me because I'd put all these profiles out there because my dad was really trying to get me to get work and doing, oh, you do video. Why don't you, you know, get a job doing it? And I was like, Dad, I'm an artist. It's not really but these guys found me while I was in this mental hospital. And that's a long story on its own. But they basically were like, we want you to help us make this movie about our lives, struggles of veterans coming home who just basically get nothing in return. They give everything for this country and they come back and their limbs are blown off and they can't pay their bills and they have all this mental illness. And I just really like seized on it. It was like, okay, a reason to live. Like, I had nothing else to live for. So I was like, all right, I poured it all into it. And they wanted me to be the director of photography. And I was just like, really not qualified for something like that, but I knew how to use the camera. And I was just like, yeah, go. Yeah, sure. Never say no, never say die. Sure. But mm-hmm. So he sent me the script and it was like, not good. So I personally got over that reservation in myself that was like, I can't do this. And I just wrote the script and I just poured all my own self-hatred and alcoholism and suicidal tendencies and thoughts into it. And this is ultimately like this working class narrative that really is just a big middle finger to Uncle Sam, you know, that these people, these veterans that America gives so much lip service to, like it values them so much, but it just doesn't care at all about these people as soon as it's gotten use from them. Finally wrote this great script and I sent it to this guy. I didn't even tell him I was writing it. And he was like, awesome. Okay, now we're going to get Hollywood funding. And I was just like, oh no, man, we're not going to do that. I was just like, we can crowdfund this. We can get money. We can do this our way with all real veterans and we don't have to shoehorn some bullshit actor in there. And they were just like, no, we're going to get funded. We're going to get picked up. And it was just like, dude, this is your dream. You know, I get it, but it's just not, the world doesn't work like that. But it was just something in that process of like realizing like I can make a difference doing this. When I realized the world was ending and I had this really frenzied, like, what the fuck do I do? It was like, what can I do? It's like, I'm not really qualified to do anything. I'm not really made for throwing bombs and blowing things up. And that doesn't really seem effective anyway. My revolutionary act is to make movies, is to express myself artistically. So I don't know, something in that process just really reminded me that I'm worth living, that I have a role in society, that I can help people, that I'm not living for myself ultimately. And that was my problem, is that I was just obsessed with my own misery. I'm a hypersensitive person, and I was just tuned to my own frequency, and I was just getting nothing but crazy feedback that made me want to die. So something shifted in me around that time, and I just decided, I didn't really decide. It was like, I started meditating, and it just, everything just coalesced around it, about this journey, this walkabout. I wanted to hitchhike across the country and to just travel, to just be free, to just explore, to treat this world map like a video game, and to just experience it and explore, and to make this life an adventure, not a mindless drudgery days on end with the frailest gap in your teeth of freedom on the weekends that you're too fucking tired to even do anything about it. So I just saved up like $1,000 working in a restaurant. And, you know, there's a lot of privilege in this story, because I could stay at my mom's house and I didn't have to pay rent. I could stack up $1,000 in a month or so. So I was ready to leave. And my dad, I told him, like, I'm leaving. And he just was like, all right, you have a backpack? I was like, nah. He opened his trunk and pulled out this nice hiking backpack and gave it to me. And I left, and I drifted. I just went where my own life was directing me to go. And I explored and I experienced things. And I spent all this time with my own self, with my own experience, with my own inner voice. And I just gradually, without really being even that conscious of it at the time, just became okay with myself, and just sort of really started to step into who I really was, and to conquer fear, and to just explore, and to really connect and tune my senses to be social. I mean, it's an incredibly social way to travel, especially when I ran out of money, which happened pretty quickly, that I didn't have money, and I was totally dependent on everyone around me to not murder me, to not kill me, to not rob me, you know? I was sticking my thumb out to get rides to go down the road. I was completely interdependent on everyone in the world around me. And it was a completely radical thing to have faith, to have that faith in the people around you, to not live without trust, to not live with this fear that you're going to be murdered and thrown into a dumpster on the side of the road, whatever. And just, it was just something really magical happened in that not having money, there's this innate need that I think we have, because we are wired to be social beings, to do things together and to do things for each other, that, you know, you can't, some people out there, you know, they are just freeloading, whatever, you know, that's what the system is. The system has never convinced them that they have anything to offer. So they're not going to offer that. They don't know that they have something to offer. But for me, and I've experienced this time and time again with other travelers, with other freeloaders, with other free people and hippies and bums and whatever, you know, that we have a desire to do things and to contribute, to give back. So it's like, I found my role in society because I had no money, because I couldn't be like, oh, you gave me a ride, here's a little bit of money. Because it just takes all the guesswork, all the thought, all the intention out of existence, out of being a collective. You do this for me, oh, here's the money. I had to find ways of giving back to people without money. And in doing that, in having to do that, because I have an inborn sort of respect and need to please other people and to be a part of something and to contribute, I learned my role in society is, you know, to give and to heal and to listen and to share and to entertain and to spread beauty and poetry and laughter and imagination and ultimately to create art. I was filming the whole thing. I was filming this journey on my phone, and I was learning how to tell stories, real stories, not contrived Hollywood narratives that really ultimately just, you know, reinforce individualism, but real narratives, real stories of who we are and what we're doing. I'm getting the wrap it up from Matt, but that was the moment in my life where I really became myself. And it was because money was taken out of the equation completely. I learned my tribal role, my role in society. And I think a world without money will push people inherently, based on not some arbitrary fear of death or freezing on a sidewalk or getting whatever, but because we have a desire to help each other, because we have a story to tell. We have something to offer this world, all of us. And money just keeps us from that, because it takes all the thought out of living.
I think that's awesome. I think that's really great thought, Zach. I appreciate you going into detail on how how you experienced all that too and came to that realization. I was wondering if we wanted to wrap it up with anything in particular. I was kind of thinking of maybe one, asking any listeners if they have any ideas for our show, to please let us know in the comments. If you have any ideas for our show, anybody, any guests you'd like to see on our show, please let us know. We are always open to ideas for guests and other ideas as well. If you have like a segment idea for the show or, you know, a topic that we should cover, please let us know, because we're always open to suggestions. And this is also a huge, vast subject that covers lots and lots of different things. So, sorry, Amanda, were you going to say something?
Yeah, just also... let us flex on you, you know, ask us the questions that you think are impossible to answer in regards to materializing a moneyless society. If you don't think it can work, tell us why, and let's see if we can prove you wrong.
Yeah, I'd really like to I would really like this show ultimately in its final iteration to be this free floating, you know, collaborative community based conversation where, you know, we don't just interview a different guest every week. I mean, I'd really like to have like recurring guests. I'd really like to form relationships with people that it's like, mm-hmm. we can be discussing this super multifaceted, complex systems thinking vision, you know, this world building. We're building a world here. I would really like to bring in a chorus of voices, and not just people who are experts, but mm-hmm. real people, you know, anyone with a story. I would really like to think that this show is really welcome to anyone who is burning with something that they feel is important to say. If they have a contribution that is going to help us build this world, I mean, and there's so many things, permaculture, alternative and renewable energy sources, I mean, new philosophies, new ways of living, sharing economies. There is so much to do here. There is so much to dig into. And I really mm-hmm. just want anybody who's listening, you know, if you're not on board for this vision, then, you know, what's your alternative? You know, we have to change. That's the point. We have to change the form that life takes. I'm really, if it will avert environmental catastrophe and the death of everything and just the continued suffering of what we're going through right now, I'm open to it. So let's have this, let's make this an open-ended conversation. Let's grow together. Let's build community. Let's build a movement.
Great stuff, Zach. That's awesome. Anybody else have anything to say? I'd probably go ahead and wrap it up.
In this moment of multiple intersecting crises, we don't just have the obligation, but the opportunity to rethink and rebuild everything. To not let this needless suffering go in vain, but to use it as soil to grow a completely new world. Continuing on this trajectory is unthinkable. Exploitation, inequality, sickness, mass extinction, and total societal collapse is the inevitable consequence of this system of incentives. Money is the cancer underlying every other cancer in our world. Reform is not enough. We have to cut the problem at its root. It may seem impossibly complicated, but it's actually the simplest, most holistic, and direct solution. It's the one change we can make to change everything. To shift our value system from an arbitrary and convoluted mess of murderous incentives that are antithetical to human dignity, sustainability, health, and happiness. To shift our bottom line to value this precious planet and the miracle of life above all else. And to actualize our collective potential to create a world beyond anything we've ever imagined. We all grew up dreaming that we could save the world from the forces of evil. This is our chance, our only chance. It's not going to be easy, but it's going to be the adventure of a lifetime.
Actually, I'd like to add one little thing. I'd like to go back to when Marlo was talking about how he found his place in the revolution, so to speak. I can so resonate with your story, Marlo, because I too had an epiphical moment that was the result of, well, we'll say a mental, emotional burden. It had to be no less than a mental breakdown that I was experiencing when I had my moment of clarity. I was in the shower, no less, utterly naked, and I felt so untethered, and I felt so exposed on so many levels, like particularly psychologically and emotionally, because all the loss and abuse I had endured leading up into that moment had me in the violent throes of trying to process not just what had happened, but where I would go from there, how I'd survive, how I would reassert myself into society when it had seemed I had lost everything that my identity was rooted in. Career, home, family, all gone. And so while I stood in that shower and I raged obscenities and I beat the walls with my fist and I didn't care who heard me, and I went hoarse from crying and screaming, I thought my chest was going to explode. And I realized, cliche and simple as it sounds, I'm not the only one. Simply put, I'm not the only one. I can't be. That would be the irrational thought to harbor, to think that I, among hundreds of millions of people on the face of the planet, am the only one experiencing these feelings, these urges and yearnings, this intuition that something just isn't right. Well, it wasn't me, and it's not you. It's the system. It's this monetized society. It's the socioeconomical model that is based on infinite acquisition, that thrives on transactional relationships only, that commodifies you and me and the earth and even the air. That's what's wrong. And if we want to make it right, we've got to consciously pluck the thought that's been buried in the back of our minds that fortifies the truth that we are all indeed connected. And we put that thought in the forefront of our minds, and then we can remain motivated to effect change. We can move forward and together, and we can conquer the thing that stands in our way. Money.
So as we wrap up our first episode of Moneyless Society, I'd like to give a special shout out to my good friend Loner, who contributed this excellent music to our cause. Be sure and check out their music on Spotify. And in the spirit of building a movement, get involved on social media, on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, and join our Facebook group for some of the best discourse on the net from people all over the world who are working every day to make this dream a reality. Creating real, strong community is at the core of everything we're trying to do here, so please get involved. And if you believe in what we're doing and want to help support us, head over to our Patreon and subscribe for as little as $5 a month. We will never charge you to listen to our content, and any contribution helps us to slay the dragon and save the world. And any smartass out there who's like, oh, y'all are trying to create like a high-tech, ecological, egalitarian, post-scarcity society where everyone's needs are met, yet you still live in an apocalyptic dystopia where everything you need to live costs money. Curious. Keep talking shit. We'll keep building the movement, telling the truth, and always striving to contribute to a better world. Thanks, y'all. Much love.